Welcome to the Iced Tea Podcast After Show, the after show where we spill the tea about things that may or may not be figure skating. I'm Netta.
I am Megan. And today we are talking about everyone's favorite figure skating movie of all time, The Cutting Edge.
1992's The Cutting Edge. Is it figure skating? We'll see. We'll figure it out.
We'll see. Is it figure skating or is it hockey? Is that the plot of the movie? Maybe.
Basically, I'm looking at the tagline. I'm just going to jump straight into this. I'm looking at the tagline for this film, which is the ultimate love skate relationship.
Okay, that's genius. Why have we not ever used that pun ever again?
I don't know, but I think it's time for a revival.
Yeah, so we are talking about the original from 1992. I believe on this podcast before we have touched upon just the harrowing fact that there is a sequel and a trilogy, and both of those star Christy Carlson Romano, but in different roles. So there are many Christy Carlson's Romano in the extended Cutting Edge universe, but none of them in this film. In this film, we just have Moira Kelly and D.B. Sweeney.
I just have so many questions about the Cutting Edge cinematic universe and how exactly it works. Actually, wait, hold on. There is 3 sequels.
No. Is Christy yes. in the latest one?
Well, the latest one is from... Okay, hold on. So we have The Cutting Edge going for the gold in 2006. Then we have The Cutting Edge chasing the dream in 2008. And then in 2010, we have The Cutting Edge Fire and Ice, which she is not in it, I don't think.
Well, then it is scarcely a Cutting Edge sequel at all in my book.
Yeah, but it was on ABC Family and... I'm guessing 5 years from now, we may or may not talk about it in this here show.
Listen, if you want the sequels, you got to let us know. Because that's, you know, that's, we do this for you people.
I will watch the sequels.
Oh, yeah. There isn't enough skating movies in the world. I will watch the ones we have.
I mean, we could have watched, like, Ice Princess or I, Tonya or, like, anything. But no, I will watch The Cutting Edge Fire and Ice from 2010. If you want it.
Yeah. So I've seen the original Cutting Edge a bunch of times. Every time I find something new.
Every time. I was thinking about it yesterday when we rewatched it in preparation for this here recording. I was thinking about how I always feel like this movie is longer than it actually is.
Yeah.
Because I always think that I'm forgetting something in the middle. Because we go from, oh, they just met and he can't stay on his figure skates to... And now we're at the Olympics long program with, like, yeah, nothing happening in the middle.
Truly, it's just the pacing of this movie is fucking insane by a cinematic and a figure skating standard. So let's Pamchenko our way into it. we begin this film with the Olympics in Alberta in 88, which is already, like... A very traumatic Olympics for any figure skating fan. Battle of the Bryans. There's that line where her skating partner who beefs it at the Olympics with her is named Brian, right? And they're like, yeah. Are you still mad at Brian for Calgary? And it was like, no!
It's even more specific. It's like, are you still blaming Brian for Calgary 88? And I'm like, yes, I am!
And that could apply to anyone. Like, who among us is not on some level blaming Brian for
one of the many Brians is being blamed.
Yeah, so Moira Kelly's character, Kate, falls Katya. At the Olympics. Katya. She falls at the Olympics because her gay partner is limp-wristed or something.
Oh my god, Megan.
I know, we can't put that in.
I'm keeping this in.
It's terrible. No, but it's true. Like, he hasn't learned to lock his elbows. They say it in the... He's limp-elbowed, I guess. Sometimes stereotypes aren't true.
He made it to the Olympics as a pair skater. And then we figure out that he has weak elbows during the long program at the Olympics.
Yeah. I don't know, man. We also meet, what's this? Is it Doug?
Yeah, Douglas Dorsey.
Yeah, so we are living in a hellscape where the year is 1992 and you can get away with having a rom-com with a male lead named Doug.
Doug. Doug Was Dorsey. Was that ever, like, hot for people? Like, oh my god, I can't wait to, like, see Doug after fucking soccer practice.
When I said I can't wait to see Doug after soccer practice, I meant I was going home and watching Nicktoons because I was a child in the 90s. But
yeah, I was not born in 92. And also, no, that's all I have to say about this. I was not born back then.
So the very first scene of this movie, we're jumping around a little already, but the very first scene of this movie of like the like Blades ASMR and the close up of like the rink, the skates and everything is so emblazoned in my memory because we had this on VHS when I was little and I couldn't, like, I remember being old, like maybe like 3 or so, and I couldn't read yet very well, but aww, I could use the VCR. So I would just take every tape we had and put them in until I found the one I wanted. And I could always identify every movie by like the first 2 seconds. So if it was The Cutting Edge and I saw those blades, I was like, oh, this is not Sesame Street.
That is so cute.
Yeah, that's like emblazoned in my brain.
I will tell you what happens in the first, like, after the weird like skating ASMR. I found a scanned copy of the actual script of this film.
Oh, can we please do it in the weird voices?
Yes, but first I would like to read you how this film opens, because there is a theme that I would like to be keeping track of as we progress here. Okay. It starts with interior Calgary dormitory room, same time. Douglas Dorsey is 22, a young man in the dead bang prime of his life. Doug is tough, solid, and good looking.
In the what prime of his life?
In the dead bang prime of his life.
You know, the dead
Doug
bang prime.
Doug is tough, solid, and good looking in a coarse, unkempt way. He's an athlete, a great one, and he knows it. He is also at this very moment in a complete frenzy, pulling on socks, pants, and shirt, just like a wild man.
He doesn't actually pull on a shirt. And it bothers me that he puts on his Olympics credentials lanyard and, like, leaves for hockey practice with no shirt on.
Just full titty out on his
titties
way
out
to
the
Olympics.
Titties out for the Olympics is so valid.
Titties out for the Olympics is going to be me next year.
Oh, yeah. All year.
You know, God willing, etc. But what I was getting at with this is one of several times where this movie makes use of the incredibly inventive device of... And then they wake up and they've overslept for something. It happens like 5 times.
It does. And they all have alarm clocks. They show them.
Yeah, we've seen the alarm clocks. They exist. But it's always like, and they missed their alarm. And now we're seeing someone run around. For some reason, it's like very dramatic for whoever, for, what's his name? Tawny Gilroy, the person who wrote this film.
No, it's not. That's someone's name.
Yeah,
the Tony Gilroy, is he an ISU judge?
He might as well be. No, he is a
screenwriter. No, he's not, because he wrote this movie. This movie has no grounds in reality.
Yeah, he wrote many things. Armageddon, The Bourne Supremacy, The Bourne Ultimatum.
Oh, Armageddon, that notoriously airtight, scientifically correct plot. I'm sensing a theme here with this man.
Rogue One.
I liked Rogue One.
He was a consulting producer on 26 episodes of House of Cards. You will notice he has no ISU credits. He doesn't know shit about figure skating.
Well, he knows what a toe pick is, and that's a great start.
Toe pick. Yes, correct. Toe pick.
Yeah, so... They have a meet cute where they run into each other in the halls.
At the Olympics.
At the Olympics, as Doug is staggering out of the fuck village and Kate is like stomping out because she's thrown a tantrum at her mean coach. I want to talk about something that comes up a lot in this film, which is that the practice fits were so good.
Yeah.
They were also sporty. There were all the like bright jewel tones and like the chevrons and the sporty stripes. They look like cheerleading costumes. Like, bring that back.
Yeah, I'm a fan, we all know, of a nice, beautiful, you know, Lissa McKinnon situation. However, if people wanted to just go back to tracksuit but with skirt, I would not be opposed.
Low-key, like, I know that Vera Wang is mad busy and, like, Nathan is just her special little buddy, but I would love to see what Vera would do for, like, a girl skater.
Ooh, yeah. I mean, we would be the only people who would enjoy it, but oh, yeah. I would deeply like to see that. But they meet 4 years before we start to care about
and he goes, hold on, can I interrupt to tell you that he says, sweetie, where I'm from, we stand for the national anthem.
He knocks her off her feet. He pushes a woman straight to the ground. She falls. He can see that she's hurt. And then he says that. because the national anthem is playing as that happens, and it is playing as that happens because he's late for his own fucking game.
The thing is that I'm so sure that if we knew anything about hockey, we would also know that all of the hockey stuff is wrong. Like, I'm sure there are rules that you can't play if you're late, right? Like, there has to be.
At the fucking Olympics, I'm sure there is.
Oh, Doug gets a traumatic brain injury and an eyeball. Oopsie. An eyeball oopsie.
An eyeball oopsie. Yeah, so he ruins his entire life in several hours, I would guess, because he abandons the German woman that he hooked up with to Gita. Run.
Gita! My name is Gita!
Because he said 9 alarm. It's such a smart pun. Oh my god. He said 9 alarm, so they didn't have an alarm. You get it?
So he
runs out. He runs into Katya, says some real douchebag shit at her, even though he has knocked her straight on the floor. Then he goes on to play at his Olympic game, and then he gets hit, because that's what happens in hockey, I guess.
But his helmet dramatically falls off and spins.
I'm not sure if that would happen nowadays. I know that they're a lot more, like, protected.
It did look a little bit like a Lego Man hockey helmet. Like, it was very rudimentary.
Megan, can I get you to turn to the top of page 9 on the PDF of this script? Mm-hmm. Because the way this traumatic brain injury happens is just so dramatic. I will now read the stage directions for you. It goes top of page 9. The Hungarian goalie braces as one of the Hungarian forwards lunges, his stick flying free into Doug's skates, and Doug begins to fall off balance, going down, still managing somehow to shoot, and the puck lifts just above the goalie's glove, and Doug into the boards, hard, the crowd cheering, and out of nowhere, the goon lumbering at full speed. This is a man with a mission, and Doug starts to his feet when wham! The goon's stick held high plows into him, a wicked crushing blow, and finally to Doug's helmet skittering across the ice, passed over players and referees, in whose horrified expression we measure the seriousness of the blow. Cut to exterior Calgary night.
That's good.
Yeah. That's some dramatic shit.
I'm not mad at that. That's what happens.
Yeah. But, like, the drama of this. So, anyway, he gets traumatic brain injury, and he loses 18% of his peripheral vision, which would be fine for normies, but can't be fine for him, because he gets, like, a blind side, and he can't play anymore.
I want to know why that's okay for figure skaters. Can you tell me why that's okay if you're going to be lifting and throwing another human who is frequently, like, I would think peripheral vision would be so important for a guy pair skater.
I'm sure. I would understand if he ended up, like, becoming a single skater. In that case, you're just responsible for yourself, and you're not really supposed to be, like, looking at your feet or anything like that. So I can understand, like, the perseverance story of a single skater without 18% of his peripheral vision. I would not, and I'm sure, I know this is not ableist, but I apologize anyway. I would not let someone who's any percent blind toss me like 7 feet into the air on ice while wearing ice skates.
No, I think that's super fair.
Like, I wear glasses and I would not trust myself to, like, be responsible for another human, even though I can mostly see. I fail to understand how it's possible for him to be eligible for any sport where he's responsible for another human's well-being.
Well, he fails to understand it too, because he still applies for every single NHL team and he doesn't open his rejection letters, which leads to the most dramatic scene in the movie, which takes place like 10 minutes in, tops. Can we please do a dramatic reading of this?
Oh my
god,
yes.
Scene with his brother. It's so acting, acting for camera 101. I'm like losing my mind.
Doug, my dear teacher, Doug McHugh, would appreciate it. Where is?
It's like page 13.
Oh my god, this script does not have this scene, I think.
This is unacceptable that this script is incomplete. Okay, so I'm going to pretend in my head, and this is true in my heart, that this scene is not in the original script and they wrote it for the actor because he was so good. Wait, where did you find it?
Yeah, you're right. There is a fight that's not here.
Yeah, they added it because the brother actor was probably just itching for a dramatic fight scene, and that's fine.
I mean, valid of him.
Valid of him. So anyway, how do we get here? Okay, so Kate is like a bitch, or as her Russian coach says, a beach.
A beach.
Hey, Netta, you want to weigh in on how accurately Russian that dude is?
He's not. The guy is, the actor is British.
Okay, but he wears a furry hat the whole movie, though,
He wears furry hat, so we're supposed to believe that he is the Russian in this entire situation. However, this is just not how the Slavic accents work, you know. It's upsetting, is what it is. And I'm sure they could have found a Russian.
They never do, though, do they? Even in the year of our Lord 2021, they're like, a Russian? Get a British guy. And then write dialogue in English that is broken in such a way that doesn't actually, like, correspond to the syntax or grammar of the language that they're originally speaking.
Yeah, I just don't understand how that's possible as a thing, but, you know, it's fine. In this case, it brings me great joy because it's just stupid, but this is not how real Russian would sound. But yes, so Katya has been horrible to every single one of her partners. She's been trying to find a new partner ever since Brian dropped her in Calgary 88. So Anton, the coach's name is Anton, he tells her dad, is it her dad? Yeah, he tells her dad that he's in the bottom of the barrel, can't find anyone else. And the dad goes, well, find a new barrel. So they remember this injured half-blind hockey player, which, how does Anton get there? We never find out. Like, we never find out how he thinks of going to Doug.
He saw him at the Olympics, right?
Well, yeah, but how do you get from seeing someone get very hurt at the Olympics to being like, I know this is the Olympic hopeful I need for my very mean pair skater who doesn't have a partner?
That's a really valid point. Maybe because they're both in Minnesota.
Maybe, I don't know. The bottom of page 16 of the script, Anton is complimenting Doug. It's when they first meet, and Anton says, you skate very strong, beautiful line, much power. Weight transfer is perfection. I see many tapes. Which means nothing.
I see many tapes every day. But Dave Goldie's already in the past. He's a mature young woman now. Like, this is nothing. This is terrible. Okay. So, great. All right. So, fast forward. He goes to her rink that is in her, like, house when they're not both in Minnesota. She's in Connecticut, right?
Oh yeah, she is. He is from Minnesota, and it's like a whole thing that he's Minnesotan and she's not.
Minnesotan.
Because he uses it as an excuse every time he's a piece of shit for some reason.
Which, like, every Minnesotan I know is like wicked nice. So
I thought that was the stereotype. I'm not sure I know anyone from Minnesota, but I have seen How I Met Your Mother and I've been taught that they're tall and big and strong and nice.
My best friend from college is really tall and really nice, and she's from Minnesota.
Well, there you go. Confirmed. We've confirmed the theory. But not this guy, apparently. So anyway, he agrees because Anton tells him that he's the last person who's gonna come, like, looking for him. And he's like, might as well be a fucking figure skater, I guess.
Yeah. So anyway, they go, they have their toe pick scene. We've all seen it. He trips over his toe picks and she goes, toe pick. Which brings us to the fact that she has the weirdest fucking fake transatlantic accent I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah. I mean, it's not just her. It's like such a product of that time in cinema.
Yeah. That weird affect.
Either way, her accent is weird.
It's very, what is this? The final stages of the Ukrainian alcohol psychosis. Like, it's very... I don't know how many slapshots you've taken to the brain, but this was your audition, and let me assure you, it's over. Like, it's very, like, radio broadcaster, like...
Yeah.
And then he goes, yo, Snow White, put a clamp on it! Like, he's full, like, skateboarding away, like, at all times, 90s guy, which is how everyone was back then, that I can confirm. Most of this movie takes place in montage.
Of course it does.
But I love that for a sports movie. I think that's correct.
Several training montages, which, yes, is correct.
Yeah, so they train and train and train. One montage they could have done, but didn't, probably for budget reasons, was showing them competing at all even one time before nationals.
Excuse me, I think you mean the Nationals.
Oh, the Nationals. Yes, the Nationals, this Nationals. It's never just Nationals, which I don't know. I wasn't there. Maybe that was like, I mean, I know when I was growing up, we used to call it the prom, and then now it's just prom. Now it's prom. So it could be the same thing with Nationals. I mean, I don't think this is a surprise to anybody listening to this, but you can't do that. Like, if you were at the Olympics if one of you was at the Olympics 4 years ago, and one of you has never figure skated competitively or otherwise in public before, as a pair, you have never skated competitively, you do not qualify for Nationals. I don't care what year it is. I don't care if it's like the 1800s. That's not, no one wants that. No one's going to let you do that.
Unless you're Daisuke and Kana trying to be Ice Dance Series in Japan.
Okay, but didn't they? I'm sure they did. Did they not do Kinky Regionals or whatever their version of Kinky Regionals is?
I don't think so, because I remember everyone being extremely excited for them, like, competing for the first time. So I think this is the closest we're ever going to get to this situation.
Okay, well, until we get a Daisuke and Kana movie. Or,
which would be
more
incredible.
Accurately, they will probably make a Daisuke and Kana movie, and then, like, after that, America will be like, but we can't have a movie in another language. Let's recast it with white people and call it The Cutting Edge 6.
Oh, no.
But that's what will happen, and it will be terrible. Oh, speaking of, also, this movie also is just the whitest thing I've ever seen. We know figure skating has a race problem, but, like, there were some Asians, there were some black people, there were some, like, Latinx people in skating. Like, what is going on in this weird AU where everyone's white? Literally everyone.
Every single person is extremely white. I think there is overall, like, two people of color in this film. One of them is a guy of Asian descent who is in a suit.
Oh, I remember him, yeah.
I think he's a journalist or something when they're giving their very weird press conference. And then I think there is, like, one black person at some point.
I mean, wasn't 92, like, peak Yamaguchi Galindo? Like, it wasn't that... Pair skating was not that white back then.
No. No, it was not. But then again, we have established that the Born Supremacy guy has no idea what figure skating is.
That's true. So, I don't know, man. They go to Nationals, and they come in third, and I guess the U.S. only has two Olympic spots that year. They lose, and then... Okay, I'm gonna be honest. I think I know logically from having seen it many times that they don't qualify, but then someone gets hurt and then they get called up, right?
No. So what happens at the Nationals is...
It's hard to follow. Even though I've seen it 100 times, I'm like, I don't know what's going on.
So what happens is they debut at the Nationals. And they skate really, really well. And everyone's like, oh my god, this is such a great, like, debut, blah, 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 blah. And then the scores come out, and lo and behold, the scores are lower than they should be.
That's never happened in real life.
Yeah, it's never once been a problem ever at USFS or any other Fed. But the scores are lower, so he gets mad. He's backstage like, what the fuck is this fucking sport? How is this possible? We did everything we could, blah, 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 blah. And it seems like they're not even gonna podium, let alone, like, end up taking one of the Olympic spots. And then the other pair that skates after them that's, like, guaranteed a podium spot and is doing great, they fall. And Anton is like, we're back in. So they're back in.
That might have been when I got up to go get a glass of water.
Yeah, maybe. But it also doesn't really make a lot of sense. Also, there is, like, this whole thing where right before they skate for the first time, he has pukes because he's anxious. And it's never addressed again.
Yeah, there's no payoff to that. He doesn't puke at the Olympics because they kiss. Sorry to spoil it. They kiss at the Olympics. They skate to, their whole thing too is they're skating to edgy, weird music. Their short is to what, like, it's like bongos, but like synths. There's motorcycle noises. I'm trying to find the part. I feel like I described it really well in our chat, and I'm trying to find it.
So a thing that needs to be addressed is, nope, I don't have it. I got distracted just now because I scrolled down the script to the incredible stage direction, interior, the dome, day. In the background, a janitor drives a Zamboni around the ice.
A janitor? Does he have a Zamboni license?
It's Kate's private rank. I'm sure she has, like...
Oh, it wasn't... Okay, I found it. It's not bongos. It's music that has motorcycle sound effects and a lot of cowbell. And it's considered wild and edgy, but if somebody did that now, holy shit, wouldn't that be fun?
Brandon Carey, if you're out there and you're listening, we have ideas for your Olympic season.
Oh my god, yeah, seriously. And then their free skate is like fake Bon Jovi.
Yeah, their free skate, I was wondering, as we were watching this, I was wondering, this movie is just old enough to have been something that in his youth, beautiful, legendary Mick Brogino would have seen. I wonder that. If that's how he got his entire aesthetic was, like, he was like, wow, I want to be doing exactly this minus the extremely mean partner cut to his entire career.
So he's like the exact same age as me, but like a week younger. So he would have been like a toddler when this came out. And I don't know what the distribution of American films in the Czech Republic was at that time, but it's very possible he grew up with this as his image of like, what if I was like a shirtless dad rock blonde?
Oh, gosh.
And I had a cute brunette wife.
And I had a... Well, we don't know if they get... They kiss in the Olympics. Yeah. Is this film...
Kissing
in
the Olympics is third base.
What if we kissed and we were both at the 1992 Olympics?
No, it's what if we kissed at the 1992 Olympics in Albertville and we were both pair skaters? Jesus Christ. All right, so what else? They make it to the Olympics and they go to the Olympics and they're gonna train this impossible fucking jump, which is like, it's called the Pamchenko after their coach. Their coach invented it. He invented this jump. And it's not like the physics in this world allow it to happen, maybe, but not in our world.
I don't think anyone, including the Born Supremacy guy who wrote this, knows how this would work theoretically.
Yeah, because spoiler, they don't show it.
We never see, like, even, like, a horrible harness CGI, like, early CGI attempt to justifying this. Basically, it is as if, you know the scene in Matilda where Trunchbull takes the little blonde girl by the pigtails and like swings her around and tosses her aside? It's that, but on figure skates. It's not pretty. Even if it were doable, it would not be attractive. He takes her by the ankles and just fucking swings her around and tosses her off to land the jump, and it's dumb.
Okay, so it's like the concept of it is that it's like a bounce, what is it, a bounce spin, like the headbanger one?
Yeah.
But then at the top of the arc of the lady in the air, he lets her go, and rather than continuing to fly off in the direction she is already flying, she somehow completely changes her axis and it turns into a twist throw. Jump, yeah. Situation. Not a throw, like a twist jump. Or is it a throw? I don't know, because they don't show it. So I don't even know.
Yeah,
what
we
it's
don't know if there's
be.
A throw or if it's just like he lets go while she's like in the highest part of the arc, because he's swinging her in like waves of going up and down. Maybe it's like he swings all the way up, lets go. That's where she's hit her axis anyway, because she's high up. She spins and lands it. We don't know. We don't know.
That
it's
would
physically
sort of make sense.
Impossible.
But I always thought it was like a twist where he then catches her and it's like, how did she stop moving? I guess either way, you can't do it. And I'm curious as to how they would judge that, because is it a spin or a throw or a jump? Like, what is it?
I mean, I wonder, because like technically in the IJS, they have shit like the quad axle and stuff with some base values. So I'm guessing if there is a way to like Frankenstein's score monster, a thing to figure out, or if it would just go towards their PCS because it's impossible to judge it as a required element. They could just be like, well, this was impressive skating skills, I guess.
Yeah, well, I'm wondering whether, well, it just makes me think, and this is far too serious of a technical question for the tone of this episode, but like, no one does a spin as an entrance to a jump, so if they did, how would you judge it?
Difficult entry. Technically, I guess. But that would be in singles. I have no idea how it would work in pairs. Also, I don't think it would work, period.
It would.
Because that's not how momentum works.
Right. Well, that's the problem. There's, you know, rotational momentum, and then there's, like, linear. I don't know. It's been a fucking minute since I've taken physics, but I just know that I just know some shit ain't right.
I infamously failed physics, and I still know that some shit ain't right. So, anyway, they decide. So, there's what we haven't addressed here is that this training process over the span of like 12 montages takes place over like a year and a half, a year and like 9 months or something, up until the Olympics.
No, it doesn't. I think it takes place over like 3 months, because Nationals is in December and the Olympics is in like 3 months later, right?
Or yeah, yeah, like a month later. But before that, like they train. They train up till Nationals, but they've been a couple, like a pair, for like a year and a half by the time Nationals happens.
Okay, yeah.
Which we never like really find out, which is how he goes from tripping over his toe pick to jumping side by side double axel somehow insanely in a year. But the thing is, the entire time they're just extremely mean to each other.
Oh yeah, that's the whole dynamic.
Not in like a flirty fun way, because like that could be fun and sexy. They're just mean to each other all the time, and then they fall in love.
But one time she gives him a book while she's only wearing a towel, and that is love.
It's Christmas and he gives her an old jersey and she's like, this is a fucking old shirt. And then they almost rip the shirt because he wants to take it back, and she's like, no, I want it. And then she gives him a book, because before that she bullied him because she's a classist piece of shit and she thought he couldn't read because he's from like a working class family in Minnesota.
And meanwhile, she like never went to school because she's a figure skater. Yeah. Which is also fine. Like, obviously she like can read.
Yeah, it, we have been rewatching, or like in your case, watching. We've been watching The L Word. And I swear to God, this is related. I was thinking about Marina Ferrer as we were watching this film, because Katya's entire way of flirting is being like, have you ever read books?
Have you ever heard of a book? And Jenny's like, yes, I have heard of a book.
Welcome to my new podcast in which Megan just does.
I just reenact the L word.
I read a book and then I wrote about it in this weird voice that I do when I narrate my weird stories. And I never brush my hair. I'm Jenny Schechter.
I have died.
Alright, anyway.
So anyway, they flirt via bullying each other in a mean way. There is a New Year's party.
Oh my god, that is one of the best scenes in this, because it's literally like you go from nothing to the most fucking insane party scene in cinema history, where you're in like a rich people's ostentatious Greenwich, Connecticut mansion where everyone's wearing ball gowns and there's a live band with like a full horn section playing the B-52s. Like, you know, normal stuff.
Love Shack. You know, a normal song to be playing at this establishment.
They do Love Shack into It Ain't Over Till It's Over.
Which, honestly, if a DJ at the party did that, I would lose my entire shit. So I understand.
Oh, yeah. Also, I always forget that that song is as old as it is. Because I always think of Lenny Kravitz as a late 90s, but I guess he's just timeless.
He's been around forever.
Oh, and then they have a weird sexually charged cheek kiss. Oh, she has a boyfriend, by the way, who's like, he goes to Harvard and then he works in London. He's just like a wicked asshole. And at midnight on New Year's Eve, she kisses her dad like on the mouth before she kisses her boyfriend.
Kiss
me on mouth, Katya. I don't know, man. It's been a minute since I've had a dad. What would you kiss your dad on the mouth?
No.
Like ever, but let it. Okay. Well, okay. There's other podcasts that address whether this is okay. What I will say is,
kissing
would you
your dad square on the lips?
Yeah. Would you kiss your dad square on the lips? Like, no. If your boyfriend was right there and it was midnight? Like, what's the order of operations there?
What if we kissed and my boyfriend was right there and it was midnight?
And we were father and daughter.
No. It's a straight up no. The only way I would be kissing a dad square on the lips is if that dad was Clint McElroy. Any other dad, no. My dad, absolutely not. But she does. And right before that, her and Doug have a very charged conversation where he goes snooping around her house and sees, like, pictures of her dead mom. And they talk about this, like, weird psychological torture device that her dad has, which is this empty case where there could have been a gold medal from the Olympics, but there isn't, which is just fucking insane. So that happens, and then they like leave, and then she kisses her dad, square on the lips, and then Doug kisses everyone at this party, and also the boyfriend's there. I think his name's Martin or something.
Well, Martin describes their entire dynamic of enemies to lovers as foreplay, so he's been reading his fan fiction, and good for him. But my question, okay, we actually have for, we need to touch upon my two other favorite scenes.
Maybe it's not, I don't know.
His name is gay boyfriend, like, I don't know his name.
Yeah.
But there are two scenes in this movie that I need to talk about. One of them is the one where they have the fight when they're, like, continuously changing back and forth between classical music and rock on the radio.
That's foreplay.
That's foreplay. It is, and they're, every single time they turn it up, like, they keep turning it up, but it's the same shot of the volume knob, and so at some point it's going back to down, like, it just, there's no continuity, and they're showing the, and they're dramatically showing what I think is supposed to be, like, the levels, like, peaking, but they're not. They're not peaking at all. So if you're, this is just a me thing where I get aggravated by that, but also I think it's really funny. And in my brain, I had this false Mandela effect memory that they somehow blew out the speakers, but they didn't. And, but that's how dramatic it is. It just feels
that
like.
That would have been way better though.
Well, when I write the cutting edge.
When you write the cutting edge seven, two edge, seven furious, it will be, they will break the stereo. What is the contemporary version? I mean, I guess stereo still exists. That was like, would they be like bickering over like who gets to be Bluetooth connected to the speakers at the rink?
Oh, that's smart. I was going to say just like switching tracks so much that it freezes or something.
Ooh, just fully glitching the Spotify.
Blue screen. I want to say my other favorite scene of this movie is when Doug goes home to Minnesota and he has to tell an entire bar full of like everyone he's ever met that he's a figure skater, but none of them have ever fucking heard of figure skating. And one of them goes, finger painting?
I am actually at this scene.
Can we read it? Because it's like, what the fuck universe do they live in where they're in Minnesota and they've never heard of a figure skater? Like, it's an ice, everybody, all kids who grow up in ice sport lands, like, do this shit. Okay, what page?
I'm trying to figure out if this, it might not be the exact cut, but it's page 58.
Okay, there's a character whose name is Blondie, 25, cute, in a ripe, blousy way. What the fuck does that mean? You know.
Oh, but she's wearing a halter top that does little to hide her ample charms.
Oh God.
But in this,
this is like a short version of the script.
In this cut, he like doesn't tell the entire bar.
Did they need to amp up the stakes? I'm telling you, they got a better actor for the brother than they thought, and they beefed up his part. It's wild though, because the brother in the movie, he's like, what are you gonna do this for 1 year and then retire and become a show skater? And then what? Being a show skater in the 90s was so fucking lucrative and cool.
Right?
Like, that was the heyday of it. And like, earlier in that scene you were talking about at the Christmas party or New Year's or whatever, Kate's like, my mom was a show skater, she was beautiful. So it's like, do you respect show skaters or not, people?
I don't think this film knows how it feels about anything.
That's very fair.
Wait, hold on. I need to read you this description of Kate's bedroom in the script.
Please do.
Cut to interior Kate's bedroom, the mansion. Large and luxurious, a pink, feminine, almost saccharine decor. Everything is in its place except for the floor that is covered with CDs. Hundreds of them scattered everywhere.
That's rich girl shit, though. 1992 having CDs.
Yeah, wow.
I was like, I don't think we got our first CD until 1995, and we were like upper middle class in the 90s. Like, that's wild
I had
shit.
Beyonce's Crazy in Love on cassette tape in the early 2000s.
CDs in 1992, gun to my head, I would have told you they weren't invented yet.
Yeah, it is extremely bougie. So anyway, all of that happens. They bully each other. She has, her and her boyfriend become engaged at one point for no reason, I don't think.
You never see it, but a 90s rom-com needs a bland fiance antagonist foil.
Yeah, I think it's like he sees them not hate each other, her and Doug, and that's it. Like, he's like, I gotta propose now because he's possessive or some shit. So they get engaged, and then we are at the Olympics. Let's talk about the Olympics, 1992 Winter Olympics.
The first time we're talking about the Olympics on this show is this Olympics. Can you believe that?
You know what? That feels right and correct. And we have talked about the 88 Calgary Olympics many
That's true.
Times.
We certainly have.
Many times.
Yeah, so it's in Albertville. We never really see a lot of Albertville.
Yeah, because they filmed this entire fucking film in, like, Hamilton, Ontario.
Hamilton, Ontario.
Oh, no! I mean, yes, his name is Alexander Samran. Wait! Speaking of Russian figure skaters, can we talk about the hottesty in the universe?
Yeah. What is it?
Well, we all know that Andrei Lazukin, my beautiful ex-girlfriend, made a podcast. He has a figure skating podcast.
He does?
Yes.
What the fuck are we doing here then?
I don't fucking know, man. Andrei Lazukin and I don't remember who else have a show called, like, I something. I haven't tried to listen yet because it's in Russian and I am not super secure in my Russian to the extent where I'm not sure if, like, I would be able to follow just audio. But so far they've had several episodes as far as I can glean from Instagram stories. And they have guests on those episodes. Megan, Lisa was on Andre's podcast.
And this in light of her Instagram story where she said that the most complicated thing in her life was Andre.
I wish you would, I would never date you, but I wish we had the complex backstory where it is a fucking gag that one of us got the other one in the podcast.
Yeah, I don't have any exes that I want to interview. I don't know if you do, but we should work
absolutely
on that.
Absolutely fucking not. No, thank you. But yeah, so I'm keeping this in because this is our... Oh, we forgot to say that. We're doing this because it was Valentine's Day this month.
Oh yeah, we were like, let's do a rom-com because it's a Valentine month.
I'm keeping everything else in, though. I'm keeping in this sidetrack about Andrei Lazukin's podcast, which I will attempt to listen to at some point, but brave of him to invite his ex on his podcast.
Good of her to go, too.
Yeah. I don't know what they talked about. I would be curious to find out. Anyway, at the Olympics in 92 in Albertville.
In the Olympics in 92 in Albertville, Doug, he fucks this blonde, and I can't remember if she's a pair skater on a different American team, right?
Wait. Is she not Brian's new partner?
Oh, you're right. She is. She is.
Because, okay, so first, the first weird thing that happens is that we wait until... Is it nationals when she finally, like, tells him who the other people are?
Yeah, he's done no homework. Like, just the coach has seen many tapes, but God forbid Doug watches a fucking tape of Nationals 91.
Yeah, so at Nationals, before we get to the Olympics, at Nationals, they finally have this, like, moment where she faces off with her former partner who now has a new partner, and it's like this whole thing. And they end up becoming the two pairs that go to the Olympics. And that's where... Several things happen. Okay, first of all, I'm thinking so hard trying to figure out the chronology here.
The good news is it doesn't matter, because nothing in this film makes sense.
Yeah, so Kate has never been a drinker. We know that for a fact. She said
she goes,
before.
She goes, I've never had a drink in my life. And then he's like, what, are you afraid to get fat? Like, that's the dialogue.
Yeah, which is stupid, because we all know vodka doesn't have any calories. Anyway... So she gets drunk.
Oh, because they got in a fight. They got in a fight because his shirt was unbuttoned.
Yeah, so they do that whole thing.
God, you know who would have a really hard time in that partnership would be our friend Nam.
Yeah, well, we know that he has a special relationship with the unbuttoning of a button at the top of a program.
Exactly.
They celebrate. No. Wait, fuck. I'm lying. The drinking happens at Nationals. Yes. So here's what happens.
Wait, does it?
Yeah. Okay, so at the Nationals, they get underscored, and then the other people eat shit. It's like the weird twins with the lederhosen, which I would like to see a film about them. But she trips over his lederhosen is what happens. And the commentator actually says that, and it's incredible. So they make the Olympic team, and that's where... They get drunk, is at Nationals in Chicago. Doug teaches her how to do tequila shots. She gets super drunk, and then she tries to get him to sleep with her. He says no because he understands informed consent.
Are you sure? Are you sure that doesn't happen at the Olympics?
Yes, I'm reading.
I watched this yesterday. What the fuck planet was I on?
No. It just makes no sense. It's just badly cut. But so she tries to get him to sleep with her. He says no. She is upset about it. And it's like this moment of like, we are supposed to think that we should feel bad for her because she's been rejected. And after that,
and he has sex with the other girl instead because she's sober.
Yeah. Yeah. He like hooks up with the other girl, which Kate finds out because she goes to like apologize to him in the morning, hungover and wearing the best fit in this entire film.
You like it because it's all black and sunglasses.
Correct. And it hides her hangover. So she goes over to apologize to him. She sees him with the other pair skater. She says something along the lines of, and I thought I came to apologize. And then that's where Anton brings up the Pamchenko as an option.
Oh yeah, and then there's the montage of him dropping her so hard multiple times in ways that I know would kill her in real life.
She should have died.
Those falls are harder than the one she took at the Olympics where she fucking beefed it, so maybe Brian was a...
Maybe Brian's elbows were just fine. So they train, there's the montage of training the Pamchenko, which is fucking insane, and she should have died. There is no care in the way he is throwing her around, and I guess it's because they're upset at each other. He has, like, the one angsty line where he's, like, she changes her mind for one night and he's supposed to be grateful, like, whatever. But anyway, they make it to the Olympics. Finally. Finally.
Also, I need you to know... Okay, so we've just officially given up on chronology at this point.
I have the plot open. I'm trying.
No.
Can I be honest for a second? I just looked up from the last time I checked my clock as we're doing this, and an hour has passed, and I'm not sure how.
Jesus. Yeah, it's, I feel very undone. I guess I sort of wonder, like, it is a really blurry and weird picture of consent that I wonder whether we're really supposed to 100% take her side. Like, are we 100% intended to take her side?
I think so, just because of the way it cuts to, like, her being upset and, like, him making bad choices. Like, the way it's presented to an audience. I'm curious to see what the script says about it. This, you know, this wonderful script which describes a random woman as, like, blousy.
Because I always sort of saw it as, like, we're definitely not supposed to totally think she's wrong, which I kind of do in real life, but I do think that I sort of got the feeling that the intention was for the audience to feel like, good grief, what a mess. Everyone's having a hard time. Everyone's made mistakes, which, you know, again, I don't think it's that complicated, but I don't think Doug is supposed to be totally the villain. Maybe I'm wrong, though. I don't know. I wasn't there. I was 2 years old.
Yeah, I was not born. I got distracted because apparently I have found a version of this script, which is not the final script.
Right.
I need you to scroll down to page 76.
Is this why we keep getting lost? Because we have like an unofficial version of the script that's not the movie?
Oh no, I've been like following the plot line on Wikipedia and I'm still lost.
Oh no, it's homophobic.
No, it's not. Anton is homosexual. The coach.
Oh my god, what? I knew that the ex-partner Brian was homosexual. So, wait, can we read this? Let's do a cold read of this. Who's who?
I'll do Anton because I'll just do Slavic accent.
Okay, I'll be Doug and I'll be American. Typecasting. So, like, midway through 74, when it's, like, the new scene?
Yes. Interior arena entrance day. Anton is seated making notes, looks up to see Doug rushing off. Douglas, Katya is ready?
I'm going ahead.
Something is wrong.
Look, I'll see you back at the hotel, okay?
Competition is so frightening.
Hey, it's not the skating. Look, man, I've got a reputation to preserve. I've got to live with myself. He shakes his head. I should have known this was going to be the story.
What story? What is problem?
I've been in a lot of locker rooms in my life, and I've never, I mean never seen anything like that. Half those guys are wearing makeup, for Christ's sake.
Anton stares, the message coming through loud and clear. Is this a problem?
Is this a problem? You think I want everyone going around saying I'm some kind of a...
Doug is angry. Anton's eyes narrow.
I should have known this would happen. You should have known. Christ, you've been in this racket for years. How the hell can you stand it?
It's simple. I am... Doug stares ashen, Anton's expression unyielding. Anton is a fucking hero. Anton is a fucking hero is not in the script, but I do think it.
And then but then says, the next line is...
It's true. Anton is homosexual.
But your daughter?
She is not gay.
That's not what I mean. And what about Judy? Judy is calling all the time.
A friend, her brother and I were once lovers.
Come on, you were married. You had kids. No way. Backing away. Oh man, we've been sharing that house for over a year. You should have told me. You should. I had every right to know.
Why? Are you gay too?
No!
Then what is problem?
You could be trying to convert me.
Are you trying to be sleeping with every woman you meet? Is a bad question. Not everyone's so hungry.
I'm upset by this. I'm glad this isn't in the movie.
This is insane.
I kind of wish that, like, Anton had been canon gay, but, like...
It would have been revolutionary for them to present former Soviet, now Russian, figure skating coach as openly queer. This is not the way, though.
I feel sad now. Like that. I guess I'm glad at least the movie could have been worse.
I think Anton is homosexual is so important to me. So what happens in the actual film?
They kiss at the Olympics.
They do kiss at the Olympics, but it's like a whole deal because that's where they fight over the button.
Is the short program at the Olympics, yeah.
Yes, they fight over the button and then they continue to fight in this weird, like, conference room in her dad's house in France, which he just happens to have because he's rich, I guess.
Oh, yeah. I was kind of confused about that.
Yeah, so they've rented this house in Albertville, because why would you stay at the Olympic Village when your daddy has money?
Don't you have to?
Well, yeah, but Kate is, you know, she's a prim and proper beautiful woman. So they have this argument with her dad present and Anton and everyone, and it somehow leads to Kate getting, like, this fucking close to being like, no, dad, this is your dream. Like, essentially.
Yeah.
Because she says something along the lines of, like, I wish you would have told me that I would still be your daughter if I didn't win the Olympics. Something like that. And that's a very interesting conversation to be having. However, this has not been the plot of this movie so far.
What if I said that to my mom? Like, no context. Like, I just wish you had told me that I would still be your daughter if I never won the Olympics. Like, what would she even say?
I think she would clog the reference.
I don't think she would, but she's honestly so sweet. She'd probably be like, I'm so sorry.
Oh, mom. That's so cute.
Okay, so yeah. And you know what else is crazy that I think about a lot? Is like, they both had the singular experience of having a really traumatic failure and injury at the 1988 Calgary Olympics that then almost ended their careers, and they've never once talked about it. They never once bonded over it. Like, I would think that experience could be something they could form a relationship on, but, like,
yeah,
they never talk about it.
Smarter film.
When I write this movie.
When you write the 7th sequel, as we established. So
she says she's gonna retire.
Yeah, she says she's gonna retire. He, like, fully sees her, like, with her suitcases being like, I'm skating this program and then I'm fucking out of here, which is a choice. He's, like, kind of shook over it. And then, oh, before that, what happens is, no, Megan, I figured it out. So they do their short program, and before they fight, it's not just about the button. She's pressed about the button. And then in their press conference after the short, she gets asked about the Pamchenko, because people are excited because they're putting in their free skate. And because she's mad at him about the button, she's like, oh, no, we're not doing it. And she, like, walks off. So then he's angry at her. And then he's like, it's always about Brian or your fucking button and blah, 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 blah. You're always, like, using other people as excuses. So that's why they fight. So that's why at the top of their warm-up for their free skate, he decides that this is the time to profess his love for reasons.
Even if, like, nothing else had happened. Like, mm-hmm. And I've remember watching Spinning Out and thinking this too. It's always in every pair skating fictional media, there's always a confession right before they go on the ice. Why would you do that ever in any circumstance where, like, a pressure situation? Are you kidding me?
One time in high school, I was fighting with my boyfriend at the time, right at the top of show when we were doing hair. So I had to sing Aquarius while fully sobbing. It was not fun. I don't know. I guess the adrenaline, I guess it's like using the same like excuses like, oh my god, I was drunk, or like I thought we were gonna die in like a different kind of movie or something. It's like the now or never kind of thing.
That's okay if you're not literally supposed to like trust each other and shit out there. Like it's a people's safety's on the line.
And also you get docked points if you're late to take your center ice.
And he kept being like, wait a minute, wait a minute. And I'm like,
yeah, he's
Olympics.
Trying to do his confession.
He's screaming at this poor fucking Olympics volunteer.
Yeah, so that happens. He tells her that at some point along the way, he fell in love with her.
That's kind of a cute way to say it, I guess. As confessions in movies go, I thought it was kind of nice.
Yeah, no, it's not a bad confession. It's just like badly placed in time. And then she says, we're doing the Pamchenko.
Because her love language is physically impossible, incredibly mortally dangerous pair skating moves.
That's a lot of words to say, Kink. But yes, so she says that.
And then they do it and it works.
They argue about it.
Probably haven't practiced it in a little while, which is alarming.
Fully have not. The dialogue in this older version of the script is way better, I've just found. But
oh, can we do a dramatic rating or no? Let me see.
It's not, the rhythm of it would not work on audio, but basically they argue if they're doing a double or a triple. He says double. She says, what difference does it make? And he says, the difference is I love you, which is kind of nice. And then she says, then how could we possibly miss?
That's not how that works.
Yeah, that's truly not how it works.
I love a lot of things. I'm not a good ice skater, though.
So anyway, they do the thing. They do the Pamchenko. It works.
We don't see how it works because the way it's cut is it shows him doing her. It shows him spinning her in the headbanger spin, and then it cuts to her spinning in the air, and then it cuts to them back on the ice. So they don't even know how it works.
Yeah, I'm noticing that there were attempts in the script to make it a lot more technical, but it would never happen. So it's a triple slingshot. It's a slingshot triple in this script. And it's described as Kate in the air soaring around and around and around and landing like a feather perfectly into Doug's waiting arms, and cut to the crowd blown away witnessing history. And
so it is a twist. It's not a throw. It's like they don't know that a twist and a throw are two different things, I think is one of the fundamental issues here.
Yeah, the guy doesn't, Tony, whatever his name is, doesn't know. So they kiss at the Olympics and that's it. That's it. That's the film.
Also, I wasn't really sure if this maybe was a term used back in like the 6.0 system, but a very cursory Googling has informed me that slingshot is not a technical term for anything.
Absolutely fucking not. Also, wait, Megan. So this is how the film ends in the version that we all know and love, is they nail the Pamchenko, they kiss while the crowd is like on their feet.
Which
blackout
infuriates me. Show me their scores. Like, okay, like maybe they won't podium because they kind of beefed the short, whatever. If they did win or get on the podium, it'd be very dramatic. But like, show me the scores.
I need you to let me read. Do not scroll to the end of this. I will read you the final, the final scene here. So the music ends. The crowd is on their feet. Everyone's cheering. Anton is smiling, exhausted, wiping away tears. The ice is littered with flowers and they're still coming, bouquets raining down from everywhere. Finally cutting to Kate and Doug, completely oblivious, all over each other, locked in a passionate, all-consuming, never-let-you-go kiss that just goes on and on and on. Music up and dissolved to the trophy case. Except now it's been enlarged and it's no longer empty. Two gold medals side by side and roll credits, music blasting, continuing as we dissolve to ice, a reprise of the opening scene, blah, 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 blah. The two lovely, innocent 6-year-old children we watched skate so touchingly before. Except now they're not skating, they're fighting, arguing, crying, finger pointing, a furious clash of wills that will only grow most heated as we fade out. The end. So they win the Olympics.
But why are they children at the end?
At the top of the thing, we see this version of the script, at the top of the film, we see like kids skating and it's cute. But then now we see them fighting, I guess, to show love and skate.
That's tonally so weird to me. Like, I can't. You would need goofy music under that.
Yeah. No. The music swells, blasting. Even if we, how would you feel, okay, we're forgetting about the kids, how would you feel if we dissolved to seeing their medals before fading to black instead of finishing on the kiss?
I prefer that.
I still wonder if it's earned.
No, but nothing's earned.
Well, yeah, I'm thinking about this too hard. I'm thinking, like, any other case, like, in a sports film, you kind of want to see, you know, that final second where something, like, goes right or wrong. Maybe the lesson is, oh, they don't win the Olympics, but they won each other's hearts or some bullshit. But here it's just, in this version, it's just, oh yeah, P.S. the case is full of gold medals now.
I just think you can't, like, maybe that's not the way to do it, but I would argue that you can't have a sports movie, like, that builds to something the entire time and does not tell you, like, how the sport ended, like, how the match ended or who won.
Yeah.
How the sport came out.
How the sport
unless
ended.
Unless you have made the entire time, the entire point of the movie over and over hammered home that it doesn't matter, or it's about learning that it doesn't matter. And although I think that they would like to think that they did that, they didn't. So, no, I don't think any of it's earned, but that's okay.
Yeah. I don't know how I would feel about this film if it was not a cult classic.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, we've spent, like, over an hour shitting on this movie, and yet I absolutely love it, and it's one of my favorite movies.
Oh, same.
Like, what do we love about it? Like, what makes it good? It's the camp, right? It's so campy.
Yeah, it's, I guess it's the same, like, you don't watch Space Jam for the accurate basketball in it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this is the equivalent. The figure skating is just a device for how completely insane this movie
and
is.
And it's funny because I think most shows and movies that are about figure skating actually show a lot more skating because they're like, people want to see the skating. They show the costumes and everything. Like, this, it was made at a time when, like, early 90s, like, figure skating mania in the US was, like, such a thing. So of course they were capitalizing on a specific audience, but it's funny that there's just not actually that much skating in it, right?
And the skating that we do have is just deeply not accurate. Also, there is, I wanted to say that, and I will be mad if I don't. There is that one very clear shot of, like, their skate doubles, and I'm not shitting on whoever a dog skating double is, but they jump their side-by-side double axels, and his air position is trash.
But I wonder if that's on purpose, though.
That would be very smart.
I think it takes a lot of talent to be bad on purpose.
yeah, especially in figure skating. I think we've talked time and time again about people who skate like they're almost falling. There is this very interesting video essay, I'm gonna say, this video on YouTube by Nathan Zed, who I adore. He's a very cool maker of things. He made this entire investigation into why we just don't get romantic comedies anymore. Like, it's not a genre that exists at all, and it's very interesting. I'm not gonna go into it because, like, go watch his whole video, but do you think this is the kind of movie that would be made now? I would want to watch something like this about the 2018 Olympics.
I actually want to say yes, because I think that this probably is considered, like, a capital letter rom-com, technically, genre-wise, but I actually don't think it's funny, and I don't think there's a lot of jokes in it. I don't think it's...
Is that a you problem, though, or a problem of the script?
I think it's a problem of the script. Like, I don't think it means to be funny. Like, does it say on Wikipedia that it's a rom-com? Or I would have said it was a drama.
It's a sports romantic,
like,
comedy.
I would have called it a drama. I can't think of, like, what's the funny line in The Cutting Edge? Go. Like, toe pick, I guess. That's it.
Toe pick.
And that's not even funny. It's just the delivery.
And when they're asked about being preparing for the Olympics and whatever at the press conference, and she says it's orgasmic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hilarious. The stuff of legends. Real gut buster.
So funny.
Real
gut buster.
So I think that if they were to make this now, it would have a similar tone. I mean, look, we don't have to question this, because if they were to make this now, it would be Spinning Out, and that exists, and we've seen it.
Yeah, but Spinning Out is so, like, fake edgy.
That's how they would do it.
We barely have it here. Like, we have the dead mom and, like, the weird gaslighting on the dad's end and, like, the psychological trauma from having this empty case. That's not never, like, talked about, though. Like, you're right. If this was made now, it would be, you know, his bleeding feet and her, like, going through trauma every time she steps onto the ice because she's remembering getting dropped at the Olympics. It would be spinning out.
Same thing. Except, wait, they're not ice dancers in that, right? They're pair skaters.
No, they're pairs because she keeps falling from places.
We were saying that they should do this with Ice Dance. They should do a movie like this with Ice Dance, and they never do, and I don't know why.
Because Tess and Scott have not sold the rights to their story.
There you go. And they wouldn't have this device of, oh, I fell, I was dropped on my head. Which, to be fair, I've seen Ice Dancers fall. I was at Nationals 2020.
Ice dance is hard, and I think it's just the, like, spectacle of how differently hard it is. Because no one would care in a movie where it's like, oh no, he stepped out of the Twizzles, and now they have level 3 Twizzles, and now their Olympic spot is in question. Because it's not falling from, like, 7
feet. It's also just so impossible to explain the rules, even in a simplified movie version.
Yeah. I was saying, though, that if they reboot this movie, they should just let Maddie and Evan play Kate and Doug. Just because she's beautiful and he's blonde.
I would pay good money for that.
Yeah, I would. Also, if they have not done that as, like, a Halloween couple costume, why?
At Maddie and Evan. What are you doing?
At Maddie and Evan, please consider just wearing, like, a red button-up and a red dress and being like, we're cutting edge for Halloween.
Please. Yeah, so I don't know. I think
what is the conclusion here?
The conclusion is...
Where do we stand?
I don't know. I thought I really loved this movie, and then we talked about it. I was like, do I hate this movie?
Oh, no, I like, love this
movie. I love
this movie.
I love the fashion. I love the music. It's so silly. It's so over the top. I wish, actually... Here's what I wish. Okay. Rom-coms, whatever. They're going to evolve as our societal understanding of what's romantic and what are the gender roles and whatever kind of evolve. As well as, like, what's funny, right?
Wow.
Sports?
Yeah.
Are we getting, like, really good sports movies anymore? Because I would say I don't think so. I think that sports movies have somehow gone from, like... a triumph of a team or, like, a little underdog to being... They're either biopics of real athletes, which is good and valid and we should do it, or if they're fictional, it's always instead about white people adopting kids from a third world country who are good at something else and then training them to be good at an American sport. Why is that what it
is? Or it's about money. I was like, well, Moneyball was, like, very, very good, but... It's a movie about capitalism and baseball. It's not about baseball.
I'm okay with movies about capitalism and sports.
Oh, yeah, but it's not the same story.
It's not. Like, wait, when's the last time we got, like,
a Mighty Ducks.
Yeah, like a Mighty Ducks, like a Miracle on Ice. I didn't see that movie, but I know it's probably... Oh, Remember the Titans? Friday Night Lights?
Fucking yes.
Bend It Like Beckham?
Bend It Like Beckham is an iconic film. I think we should bring back the stakes of sports anime into full-length film.
That's what it is that sports anime is doing that now. Because I was going to say, like, no one has ever and probably will ever do fictional figure skating better than Yuri on Ice. Like, that's just the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah,
because it's a correct. Sports anime. Sports anime hits all the specific beats that they used to hit in sports movies, and they just don't do anymore.
Does getting very drunk at a gala count as a meet cute?
Yes, but that's what's great about Yuri on Ice too, and we're talking about Yuri on Ice again, is that it's a subversion because it's that fucking great trope that I'm obsessed with where it's like something happened pre the start of the story that only one of them remembers but the other one doesn't know that the other one doesn't remember.
Thank you for joining us for yet another commentary on Yuri on Ice. We are not done. We're gonna do 17 more episodes about Yuri on Ice.
You're fucking lying to us if you don't love it. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like everyone's seen it. If you haven't seen it, just watch it. Because it's like, maybe you're not that into anime. But, like, I think not being into anime in 2021 is kind of over. Like, it's like...
The coward's way out.
Yeah, like, I understand if you said that 10 years ago, I'd be like, okay, it's a niche thing. I mean, it's like saying you're not into rap. Like, it's like, there's something for everyone. You can't just say you're not into rap, you know?
Yeah, just give it a try. Give rapping and sports anime a try. Is the conclusion of this.
Write a rap about Yuri on Ice and send it to us.
Don't stop us now, the moment of...
Yeah, if you write a rap verse to We Were Born to Make History and send it to us, you are now the third host of this show. And
yeah, this is the
actually
audition.
You can have my job and I'll move to Russia and co-host with Andre.
In English, mind you, she will not learn Russian.
I'll just over and over be like, Anton is homosexual.
Anton is homosexual. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for being here. If you're hearing this, that means you're a Patreon supporter, and being a Patreon supporter means that you've kept our lights on, and you have helped us support other people in need in this real fucked up time. So thank you. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. We really appreciate you guys so much more than we could possibly say. And we hope you guys continue to stick around. We're going to do even more stupid unhinged shit monthly. You know how it goes. So yeah, thanks for listening. Don't forget you have a topic.
Thank you for listening. Oh my, I was about to say the same thing. Watch your topics. Bye.